Welcome to my podcast, Insights by Ben Siegel. The name of the podcast was based on the idea and notion that every episode will have one insight or one nugget of knowledge after hearing from our guest. I'm Ben Siegel, Managing Director of Private Wealth at UBS Financial Services. Our team, Connor Siegel Partners, is based in New York City, Miami, and Boston. After the podcast, I can be reached at benjamin.siegel@ubs.com. Today, I'm joined by Jacques Torres, founder of Mr. Chocolate, a global leader transforming culinary arts as well as the food and beverage industry. Jacques, a big welcome.
Bonjour, Ben.
Well, Jacques, I want to ask you this. Why is your chocolate so much better than everybody else's?
Thank you. Thank you for the compliments. I think my company is based on product. It's not based on marketing. It's not based on investing a lot of money in it. I start with pretty much nothing, just product. And from the product, the company grow. So to me, it's important to stay behind it, to taste it, to be sure that what I give to my customer is what they want. And that's, I think, very important. You know, sometimes you buy a box of chocolates and you have to turn it around to see the flavor of what you just eat. I don't like that. I want that when you open a box of chocolates, you pick a chocolate, you bite on it, and right away, you know what it is. If it's hazelnut, you have an explosion of flavor and caramel and hazelnuts. And if it's raspberry, you feel the fruits or the lemon. It's important for me that you really taste, you know, and you know what it is. You don't need a little booklet to know what you eat. So we are very selective as a company with the product and also with the cacao. Cacao is a little bit like wine. Origin are very important, and process is extremely important. When you put those two things together and do a good job, then you're going to end up with a good box of chocolates. So I think we are very serious about bringing a good product, something with a lot of flavor.
I tell you this, I never get palate fatigue after I have some of your chocolate. So I've seen a bunch of kids come to your studio, your place of where you work, and I have to say, one of my favorite movies when I was a kid was Willy Wonka. And when I saw the kids and how you handle them, I was like, are you the real Willy Wonka of today?
I have to say, and I stand behind that, Willy Wonka is a fake. That guy is just made for TV. I am the real thing. I am the guy who makes the chocolates. So it's funny, but I always say that. I say, look, Willy Wonka, he's the fake guys. You know, I am the real thing. I make the chocolates.
Absolutely, and you make kids smile. So one of the things that I want to talk about, you were a celebrated pastry chef at Le Cirque, which was, I think, the top-ranked restaurant at the time. What was the exact moment that made you leave that high-profile life to start a chocolate factory in Dumbo in 2000?
So, I don't know. It's take a lot of time for me to come to that. But I was around 40. So I think that men go through that stage at 40 where they want some change. I just lost my dad that I was regarding very highly. My dad was a carpenter, a very good craftsman. And I don't know, I'm thinking, okay, I give so much to the industry, to the pastry. What else can I bring? And I didn't know what else. And I never run a business. I never run a company. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe it's time for me to start a small business. So I was training for New York Marathon, and I was going from Midtown, going down to the Brooklyn Bridge, cross now Dumbo, go to the Manhattan Bridge, and come back Midtown. And in that loop, I discovered Dumbo. And Dumbo is the portion between the Brooklyn Bridge and Manhattan Bridge in Brooklyn side. And I'm looking at that area thinking, wow, there is no business. There was no retail at that time in Dumbo. And I'm thinking, maybe I can afford a place here. It's next to Manhattan. I can always deliver people. You know, there is two bridges. It's very close. And it's a little bit desolated. So I start to talk to someone called David Valentas. And I find a space that I rent. And that's how I start Jacques Torres Chocolate with pretty much nothing. A little bit of my retirement money and a lot of sweat.
Wow, that's amazing. I used to walk by the Jacques Torres Chocolate Factory down in Lower Manhattan.
Yes.
And I always wondered why a Spanish guy was running a chocolate business. And then I found out that you were French. So how do we, how did you get to this point? Like, what was your childhood? Where did you grow up? Where were you born? And what did you do between when you started and then?
So basically, if we look at where I come from, my family come from a small island, small Spanish island called Ibiza, that people know that island for a party island. Huh?
So they certainly do.
So yes, my family come from Ibiza, but late 1800, beginning of 1900, part of the family went to Algeria, where the French government was giving land for people to colonize this country, Algeria. So my grandparents went to Algeria. Ibiza was a place where there was no much future at that time. So my parents was born in Algeria. So a French country from a Spanish family. It's and Arabic. There was a lot of course, it was also Arabic. So I grew up in Algeria until, yeah, I think, 3 years old. So I was very young when, in 1962, when the Arab take over the country, when France fight for this land and lost it. So my parents, instead of going back to Ibiza, went to the south of France. They had the French passports, of course, so they was French. So they went to the south of France, and part of my family went back to Ibiza. So I was lucky that I grew up in the south of France, in a small town called Bandol, where we have good rosé wine. And every summer, we visit family in Ibiza. So what a better childhood than growing up in Provence, traveling to Ibiza, go to a little school in Bandol. There was only 7,000 people living there. So it was a small community. I think I had a very happy childhood in Provence, in Bandol. Then when I reach, I think, 16, that's when you can pick a profession in France. So I start at 14 to give a little time and to work first in a restaurant. Then I discover pastry. I work in a pastry shop at 15. And the owner of the pastry shop told me, say, look, if we like you, if you want to do an apprenticeship, then at 16 you can sign up. So at 16 years old, I signed up to become an apprentice. And this is where I learned my skill of pastry, chocolate, ice cream, candy, all sweet. Then after that, I worked for 1 year in another place next to Bandol. I went to do my military time in France. At that time, you have to do that. So I did 1 year under the flag. And then getting out of that, I did not know really what to do. I had a girlfriend who was in Nice, at the faculty. So I went to see her in Nice, and I tell her, look, maybe I look for a job in Nice. So I pass in front of that beautiful, monstrous hotel called Hotel Negresco in the Promenade des Anglais in Nice. And not knowing better, I went through the front door and asked for a job. And the gentleman behind the desk told me, say, young man, you cannot ask for a job in this desk. You have to go behind the hotel and talk to a gentleman called André Charpentier, I still remember his name, and see if he has a job for you. So I went behind the hotel, meet André Charpentier. He take me to the kitchen, and that was a revelation to me. I walk into this kitchen, and it was like Ratatouille. You know the movie Ratatouille? Yeah. The guys with the beautiful hat and the whites and all the copper. And,
right.
And I'm looking at that kitchen. I never see a kitchen like that. That was like 20 chefs and I was in awe to see that beautiful kitchen, like an army. And then I meet the chef, and the chef was Jacques Maximin, very, I don't know how to express that, a little bit of a crazy chef, a lot of energy, cigarettes in his mouth all the time, even in the kitchen. And he look at me and he tell me, what do you want? And I say, look, I come out of the army. I do pastry. You have a job for me? And he look at me, say, kid, if you're good, I keep you. If you're bad, out. And I tell him, I say, try me. You know, I didn't know this guy. Why do he talk to me like that? So I say, try me. He like it. He like that I go back to him and say that. He say, okay, come back in an hour with your uniform.
In an hour?
In an hour. So I get out and I told my girlfriend, I say, I don't own a uniform. What do I do? So I went to buy a uniform, come back right away, and I start 8 years career at the Negresco. 6 years later, I enter a competition called Best Craftsman in Your Profession. That's when you see the chef with their collar around the neck,
right,
in France.
Right.
So this is a meilleur ouvrier de France. So I entered that competition and I won. I was 26.
MOF, it's called, right?
I'm sorry?
MOF.
MOF.
Yes.
MOF. And I was the youngest guy to win that competition at 26.
So you were the top pastry chef in France then?
Yes.
From that award?
Yes.
Wow. So at 26.
At 26. So that was amazing because, look, you need a lot of luck in life. So that's a giving. And I see during the competition, people fail, not because they was not good, because they had no luck, because they did something that failed or something that didn't please the judge. I mean, it's, you know, again, competition is like that.
But you had a methodology how you did things.
Oh, I worked very hard. I trained very hard. And lucky me, when I trained, the gentleman who was training us was a little bit snob, and he was one of the MOF, and he was putting himself over everything and everyone. And I'm thinking, I'm never going to want that thing. So I work even harder. You know, sometimes when people push you down, you work harder. So I did work harder, and the result was that I get that title at 26. So I enjoyed that title for a couple of years in France, but I realized that I cannot take a class anymore, because MOF don't take class, they give class. I cannot go to those seminars. I was a little bit lost in a way. So I decide that I'm going to leave France, I'm going to go to another country, I'm going to, you know, go to see what's going on somewhere else. So I did two offers, one in Japan and one in US. But I always love US. I came a couple of times before. I always loved the American way. So I pick US and I came to US 35 years ago for the Ritz-Carlton in Rancho Mirage, California. And that's it. The rest is my career in America.
So before we go into chocolate, one of the things that you did was you lived on a boat for 6 years in New York City. And I think that's fascinating because you had certain goals or certain dreams of doing things, and you did them. So can you tell us a little bit about what it was like to live on a boat?
That was a part of my life. I always say priority. What do you want in life? And I had my business. I was running my business. And I was always, my office was downtown Manhattan. And when I was running, I was always running along the Hudson. And then one day, running around the Hudson, I realized that some people live on boats in New York. When you go to the boat, I think it's boat, I don't remember the name of that, marina, it's around
79th Street Basin?
Yes, 79th Street. So I ran there and I saw those boats and I'm thinking, I can have a boat. I can sometimes live on the boat. So I start to get information. I hire someone to help me buying a boat. And I tell him, I say, I want a boat that I can live in. So we do the research, and he come back to me with a 40-footer motorboat with two cabin, and he give me some picture. I love it, so I say, okay, let's get it. So I went to get it. It was in New York, up the river, up the Hudson. So I went with him. I buy that boat, bring it back to Liberty Landing Marina, where I secure a space, and there I learned how to be my own captain, how to go fishing, and I love it so much that I live 6 years on a boat. And it's very interesting because a boat is pretty small. So you will have one suit, maybe two suits. That's all you can have. You cannot have much more. Couple jeans, couple t-shirts, and you know, you cannot have much clothes or much cooking equipment. A boat is, you know, relatively small, but you have everything on the boat. You have a satellite for your TV. You have, you know, your wash machine. I mean, everything was like a little New York apartment, in
right.
fact. So I love it. And every morning I take my bicycle, I go on the ferry, and the ferry take me downtown, and I was going to walk, and then on the evening come back. And for some reason, I believe that when you go underwater, you get, some people need to be grounded in grass. I love to be grounded in water. I grew up in the south of France, looking at boats all the time. So that was a kid dream, to be able to fish from my window. I was thinking, one day I will have a boat. So I make it happen. I live on it for 6 years. And people told me when I buy my boat, the best day is when you buy your boat, and then the best day also is when you sell your boat.
Right.
And for me, the best day was when I buy this boat, and when I sell it, that was a sad day. I cry, actually. I cannot help the person who buy the boat to take the boat out of the marina. He told me, he said, look, it's big, so can you take it out? I say, I can't. I just can't. I give him the key. At that time, I had the motorcycle, jump on the bike and went to walk. I say, I can't. I cannot look at my boat leaving. And I still think about that boat. I love it.
So having a motorcycle, being on a boat, that must help you become very creative, right? Because you feel like you're part of nature. How's that helped you in your chocolate business?
You know, it's interesting. People ask me, where do we get ideas? Where do we get, what is the influence? How do we come up with chefs or you know, with new products? And I think that you are or you are not. It's not a time of the day where you say, oh, you know, I'm going to be creative from 8 to 9 a.m. No, it's part of your life.
Yes.
I mentioned that my dad was a carpenter. My dad was a carpenter all his life. In vacation, he will stop in front of a house and draw on the paper a door or something that he see that he want to reproduce. So he was a carpenter 24/7, not just when he was at work. For what I do, it's the same. One morning, like today, cold New York, but it was fall. So I crossed Central Park and I saw those beautiful maple leaf, you know, falling down, and the smell of nature, and being surrounded by nature in Central Park. I'm thinking, I'm going to make a dessert with maple syrup, and I'm going to use some pecan, and I'm going to do a big maple leaf as a tuile, and I was building those desserts in my head in Central Park. And that's how I think you create. It's not something that, it's something that come to you. You have to be receptive, you have to want it, and then ideas come to you, and don't push them back. Just develop them, just think about them, just taste them. I can close my eye and taste flavor. So this is how I develop flavors and I develop new product. It's not on my desk looking at books. It's usually during the day doing something else.
Wow. So from your experience, what I'm learning here is, A, you've got to perfect your craft by constantly doing it. You have to set goals, and it's part of your whole life, is that you look for ideas, and that's how you become creative. It's pretty amazing, because if you're not the top, you're in the top five pastry chefs in the world, and that's how you did it. That's pretty amazing. So when we look at today, like, one of the things I find very interesting is that anytime I send a box of chocolates, especially yours, to some of my clients, they always call me back and say they love it. They're always smiling. They're always happy. What is it about chocolates that make people happy?
My understanding, and again, I'm not a scientist. I cannot explain that, you know, completely. But my understanding is that chocolate has compounds that make you happy. Those compounds are comparable to the compound that your brain produce when you're in love. And when you're in love, everything is beautiful. I'm sure you went through it. I'm sure you remember. And the sun is more bright, and there is no cloud on the sky, and nothing bad can happen. Chocolate has those compounds that make you happy. Also, some people are very receptive to it. So some people are going to eat the chocolate, and it's only chocolate. And some people really have that mood elevator that really hit them, and they love it. So I think that chocolate is one of those products that make people happy. And it's easy to offer chocolate, because it's not like alcohol, where you don't know if someone going to drink, flour, they are gone the next day or the following day. You know, a box of chocolate is something that you can have in your desk, it's something that you can offer to the family. It's a fun product, and you discover a box of chocolates has so many different flavors. So every time you bite on one, you look at another one, say, oh, I want to try that one. And that's how things go. So that's why we work very hard on flavor and on the delivery. You know, what is the what you're going to feel when you bite into the chocolates. Everything is important. The way the chocolate is going to melt, the way that the flavor is going to hit your palate, where those flavor go, the flavor coming back to your nose. It's like wine. It's like having a good glass of wine. And when you close your eyes and you just smell it and you just drink it and you have all those flavor, chocolate is the same. A lot of the flavor of the chocolates actually are comparable to wine.
So your motto is a real promise to you, right? Can you explain that a little bit?
You know, I don't like flavoring. I think that... Artificial flavoring, right. Yes. I don't like that because a lot of time, artificial flavoring are oil-based, and oil will stick to your taste bud, and then the flavor stick there. So you eat a chocolate with artificial flavoring of orange, and then you get the orange flavor. It's not bad, it's orange flavor. But the problem is that orange flavor stay there with you for another 10 minutes. So you have another chocolate that's a little bit less strong, but you still have that oil, that flavor stay in your throats and mess up everything to me. So I like to eat something, get the flavor, then the flavor go down, and then you eat something else. So I promise people that if they buy my chocolates, if it's raspberry, I put real raspberry in it. If it's lemon, we press the lemon. Everything is real. I think that's important. My store have real wood, real glass, real metal. There is no plastic. I really try to follow this model all the way to the store. So you have a feeling already when you come to the store that it's real, it's solid,
it's authentic.
It's authentic. Authenticity is very important.
Wow, that's fascinating. I tell you, if your chocolate cookies are unbelievable, why does it taste so much better than anything I've ever tasted?
Those cookies have a fun story. I tried different pastry, French pastry, you know, little things, and things was not selling so well. And I'm thinking, American love cookies. Everybody told me that. I'm going to make cookies. I don't know how to make cookies. I didn't grow up with cookies. I don't have any recipe for cookies. As far as I went for pastry, I did not make cookies. So I went to the supermarket, buy a box of, do you know the chocolates? It's those little chocolate pieces. Yes, so yeah. I buy the package. I came back to the factory. I open it. I taste the chocolates. Don't like it. So I trash the chocolates. But on the box, there was a recipe. So I flattened the package. Now it's no chocolates on it. And I copy the recipe, I'll put it in grams, and I rebuild the recipe the way that I think might be better. So I rebuild that recipe, and then I try it, and I make a bunch of cookies, and I use a different chocolate. I use the chocolate that I think was good to it, 60%. And so the chocolate melt, and those cookies came out of the oven. We try them, they are good. We start selling them, and we had a big success with those cookies. But I realized that the chocolate that you buy at the supermarket doesn't melt. When you put it into the cookies and you bake those cookies, cookies take, I don't know, 15, 18 minutes at 350 degrees to bake. The chocolate doesn't melt at 350 degrees for 20 minutes. So you have to wonder what's happened when I eat those cookies in my stomach. That chocolate doesn't melt. So what is it? You just go through? I mean, it's very strange to me. A chocolate that doesn't melt, I don't trust it. So I use a chocolate that melts, that layer inside the cookies. When you bite it, you know, chocolate is made to melt. And my understanding is big companies use that type of chocolate that doesn't melt because delivering chocolate in the summer, chocolate melts. So they come up with a chocolate that doesn't melt. And I don't work with that. I work with real chocolates. Again, real is my promise to you, a chocolate that will melt.
As a head judge on Nailed It, what was the most important lesson in the baking that the show teaches despite the hilarious failures.
Nailed It is a very funny show. Basically, Netflix called me and I didn't want to do one of those shows where there is a lot of drama, you know, reality show. So they offered this show and Hasti, my wife, told me, she said, Jacques, look at the script. It's not really what you hate. It's a reality show, but it's nice. So I look at the script and I say, okay, you know, I try it. So I went to LA and I meet a lady called Nicole Byer. She's a comedian. And Nicole cannot be more at the opposite of the spectrum than me. She doesn't know anything about kitchen. She doesn't know anything about product. And she's a comedian. She's always doing those comedy shows. She's very funny. And I'm a chef. So they put us together on a big table and judging a TV show. And we have the best time. I mean, the chemistry between her and I was so much fun that we get 4 nominations for Emmys. The show was really a big success. And I had so much fun taping with Nicole. So, you know, the lesson here is have fun. And at the end of the day, it's pastry, something that you're going to eat or maybe not, but have fun doing it because that's not going to change the output. I mean, really. And when you do cakes, when you do pastry, when you cook, the first time that you do it is not always the best time. So, you know, don't give up. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Become better at it. I think that's important. And I think what Nailed It did very well, they screened the bakers before they come on the show. And they always pick the best and the most funny people. So we had a lot of fun doing this show.
So how has social media, Instagram, how has that helped your business?
I think that today, in today's world, you cannot avoid to be on social media. You cannot avoid to be on TikTok, on any kind of platform. You need to have a YouTube channel. You need to have a presence. That's for sure. You know, I was born way before social media, and I don't do social media myself. I have a company that helped me doing that. I will do the contents, but that's all I will do. I don't understand everything. And I even stop scrolling because sometimes I realize that I waste time and I don't want to waste time. Life is too short. So I kind of give up on scrolling and on being on TikTok and looking at things. But I am in it because that helped my business. And today, this is the big way of communicating with different ages. And younger your clientele going to be, more social media presence you have to have. So it's important, it's extremely important.
All right, I'm gonna ask you a couple quick rapid questions. What has changed since 2000 when you started your chocolate company?
Oh my God, so much. Things go so much faster today. Today, you can get an unhappy customer that's going to send a tweet when he's in your store, and you're going to be able to react to that customer and change his view of your company. The same 5 minutes. Because if you have someone in your company watching what's going on and you have a complaint and you are at that time in the store, you can call your manager, say, be careful, there is a gentleman there. He doesn't like the way that we give him the hot chocolates. Can you try to find out what's going on? Bingo, you can fix problem. That didn't exist before. I mean, in my generation, when you take a picture, you need to send the film to a company that's going to send you back the picture a week later. Today, you take a picture and it's instant. You can look at the picture, you can make it bigger, you can look at the details. Things go so much faster, it's unbelievable.
Okay, is white chocolate actually chocolate?
White chocolate contains cocoa butter. Cocoa butter is the fat into the cacao beans, but actually, that fat is 50% of the cacao beans. So by definition, yes, it is chocolate. It doesn't contain cacao, but it contains a lot of cocoa butter. So white chocolate is actually milk powder, sugar, cocoa butter, vanilla, and lecithin. That's what you find in white chocolate. Kids love it. So I cannot avoid it. I don't use a lot. I don't eat much of it, but kids love it.
Is chocolate good for your heart?
again, I'm not a doctor or a scientist, but what I read is, yes, chocolate is good for you, and please eat a lot of chocolates. I need to retire eventually.
What junk food do you eat?
Less and less. I have to say that I eat less and less junk food. Yes, sometimes my kids going to have some candy, are going to nibble on it, and I try to stay away from too much sugar. Or what is those orange things that kids love, and they are addictive, but I will bite on a couple of them and then I stop and my finger gets orange. I don't eat much junk food. I try to stay away from it.
So what would be the best advice you would give someone who's trying to be in the chocolate business or pastry business?
I think that I should believe in me a little bit faster. What I mean is, when I find a space in Dumbo, I build that space myself. I make the furniture. I did the sheet rack. I did all those things myself. Why? Because I was so scared of failing that I invest as less as I can. So I waste time by doing that. I think that if I believe in me a little bit more, I will borrow money and I will start my company maybe with a bigger bang. I was lucky, everything worked well, and the company, you know, was and is successful. But if I believe in me a little bit more, I think I will go a little bit faster. So believe in yourself. If you have a good product, and you know, someone from the finance industry told me at the beginning, he said, look, Jacques, it's very simple, low cost and good product. Low cost on whatever you're going to do, and good product, and sell your product making money. He said, if you can follow that rule, you're going to be successful.
It's so funny you say that. I just was with a former Fortune 100 CEO who said to me that it's the quality of the product and the price. If you get those two right, you'll have a successful business. So my last question to you is, you have this motto, life is short, eat dessert first.
I really think that's the way that I approach life. I always think life is short. I always think that. So I try to do and to pack my life with as much things as possible. I mean, I left the country when I was successful in France, but I left the country because, you know, that was something that I want to do.
You took risk.
I take risk. I open a business. I work in different places. I live on the boat. I have kids now. I had my daughter after 60. I was after 60 years old when I get my daughter, and my son now is 9 years old. So I embrace life thinking every day, life is too short. Let's do as much as we can. This weekend I was in Vermont, I take my kids skiing. I mean, I try to do as much as I can. The day that I'm gone, I will have no regret. I did so much, and hopefully that's for a long time.
Well, thank you very much, Jacques. Jacques is one of the top pastry chefs in the world, and thank you for sharing your insights with us.
My pleasure, thank you very much.
Jacques, thank you for sharing your journey and insights. To our audience, thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to connect or continue the conversation, you can always reach me directly at benjamin.siegel@ubs.com. Until next time, I'm Ben Siegel, and this has been Insights by Ben Siegel.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.